Little baby Jesus. Where's the little baby Jesus? I thought you were bringing the little baby Jesus.
No, you were supposed to bring it. I told you this morning, remember the little baby Jesus in the box under the bed.
Well, I never heard you. Shall I go back and get it?
No, the play starts in under an hour. We'll have to find a replacement.
Tommy Trindle has brought his puppy in. We could dress that as Jesus.
A puppy. Can it be relied on?
It's better than no Jesus at all.
The local paper headline summed it up. Jesus runs amok at school nativity.
Hello there, and a very Merry Christmas to you from me, Annie Rutherford, and from the rest of the Far Off Places team. May you be serenaded by snowflakes and sugar plums. Opening the podcast there, we had Little Baby Jesus by Dave Clark to get us in something like the Christmassy spirit. We'll continue with a less seasonal piece, Anna, by Liam Hogan. Both Anna and Little Baby Jesus appeared in the third issue of Far Off Places, Under the Bed. So if you enjoy them, make sure you go to our website, faroffplaces.org, to get hold of your very own copy as a Christmas treat to yourself. But for now, reheat that mince pie and settle yourself nearer the fire. Are you sitting comfortably? Then I'll begin.
Day, longest night, standing still, great sun so bright.
Anna. It's weird, the things that can mess up a kid's head. Take Anna, for example. I'm not sure where she got it from. She wasn't able to tell me. Doctor Who, perhaps, or an overeager and geeky uncle, maybe. But she was convinced that every time she looked under her bed, the universe split in two. In hers, so far, there was never anything bad lurking there. In the other, in a parallel world in which Anna looked under her bed every night before going to sleep and after saying her prayers, and where up to that point she had also never found anything bad. This time there would be a ghastly, cruel, evil demon, all teeth and claws, whose deepest, darkest desire was to catch and tear apart Anna, aged 6¾ years. Little wonder she said her prayers before she looked. Little wonder she had nightmares. I told her that wasn't the way the multiverse theory worked, that for every Anna that found a slavering beast, there was one that found a toy she'd forgotten about, one that forgot to look under the bed. She'd skewered me with her most outraged look. This Anna never forgot to look. Or one that found a magical fairy that would grant her 3 wishes and 1,000,000,000,000,000,000,000 other possibilities, all far more likely than the one that terrified her so. But it's hard arguing theoretical physics or probability with a child yet to turn 7, and as I wasn't prepared to deny the theory outright, for obvious reasons, it was clear this notion was not going to be an easy one to shift. It wasn't simply that she had a binary, black versus white, yes versus no, either or view of the coin toss that happened in her imagination every time she lifted the bed skirt that kept under the bed out of sight. It was because what she was terrified of wasn't the finding a monster under her bed. It was the not finding a monster under her bed. In her head, every time she survived, she doomed a parallel universe Anna to a horrible and grisly death. It was the guilt that was crushing her. So, why don't you not look? I reasoned. I have to, she replied with an air of ancient sorrow. There might be a monster under the bed. I have to check. And even if I don't, the other Anna would. This got me scratching my head a little, figuratively speaking. I'm a psychologist by trade, not a physicist. Wouldn't that require the universe to have already split? And once the other Anna looked, it would be her universe that split again,
Not this Anna's. But maybe there was something I could use. I checked my watch. We still had another quarter hour of the session to go. I thought for a moment of her parents and what they wanted. Impossible things. Wrong-headed things. Reading between the lines, not a tricky task with those two. They wanted to stamp on her imagination, crush her creativity, stifle her blossoming intellect. To make her as easy to handle as she had been 12 months earlier. To make her normal. But normal wasn't an option. It was clear to me that this precocious child had the potential to far exceed the pretensions of her middle-class parents. Anna, I said, putting the deliberation into that invocation that I was sure would make her consider her answer. Who looks first, you or the other Anna? She suspected a trick and trod carefully. We both... Then she corrected herself. There is no other Anna. Not till I look. Or there is, but it is me and we haven't split yet. So if she is you, then she will react to finding the monster the same way you would. She sucked air through the gap in her front teeth. I guess. And how would you react if, when you lifted the cover, you found a monster there? What would you do? I waited. The silence stretched into the space between us. This was somewhere she hadn't been before. I don't know, she said quietly. But you'd do something. You wouldn't just sit there. No, she agreed. I'd run, hide, scream, maybe. I'm sure you would. And what would your parents do if they heard you scream? I asked. They'd come running, she said. And they would. Any parent would. I let her think about this for a moment. Anna. You're intelligent, resourceful, and brave. And the other Anna, she is exactly the same. She is, after all, you. She, you, would not take it lying down. You'd fight, you'd run, your parents would help. The one thing you are not, would never be, is a victim. Please don't think I haven't noticed the hobby horse propped up against the toy chest in easy reach and ready for action. And the roller skates on the landing, she said. I wasn't sure how the roller skates would help. Perhaps she hoped the monster would trip on them. I knew that she'd be upset if I told her that her mother wordlessly tidied them up each night, tired of telling Anna off for leaving them there. And the skates, I diplomatically agreed. It's not much, maybe, but you're doing the best you can. And so would the other Anna. No monster is going to get a free lunch in this house. She laughed. She had a lovely little laugh, made all the more charming by its rare use. I pushed on. So it's not a foregone conclusion that the monster always wins. And if it does not, then there are two Annas, she interrupted. This wasn't quite where I'd been going. I wanted her to accept, to acknowledge that she wasn't responsible for what happened in the other universes. How could she be? But sometimes... Usually, in fact. You had to let your patient find their own path. And then four, and then eight, and then... She babbled on. A small chime rang out on my watch. Okay, Anna, I think we've made some progress. We'll leave it there for today. A muffled voice came through the door. Anna? Honey? Who are you talking to in there? Anna called back. No one, Mummy. Which was an illuminating denial. And I jotted it down on my pad for future discussion, as I imagined Anna's mum standing the other side of the door, wondering if she should come into the bedroom, and how that had played out on other occasions. Okay, sweetie, she caved in, as I had suspected she would. But try to get some sleep now, you hear? Anna waited for a moment, as the footsteps faded away down the hallway. Good night, Doctor. Good night, Anna. I replied, sleep tight. And I slid myself back under her bed, listening to her breathing softly slow, and waiting for tomorrow night when she would once more lift the valance and, all being well,
discover me lying there, ready for our next session.
Shortest day, longest night, standing still, great sun so bright.
Dave Clarke was born in Essex and lives in Cambridge, although his stories are mostly set in Swansea, New York and London, and occasionally outer space. His stories have also appeared in the charity anthologies 50 Stories for Pakistan and 100 Stories for Queensland. A tentative website is currently being constructed at terenceoblong.blogspot.co.uk. Liam Hogan was abandoned in a library at the tender age of 3, emerging blinking into the sunlight many years later, with a head full of words and an aversion to loud noises. He usually writes for the live performance event Liars League, but you can also find his work in print in London Lies, Fear, Volume 2, and In on the Tide, as well as in various online magazines, and at his bibliography, happyendingnotguaranteed.blogspot.co.uk. He dreams in Dewey Decimals. That's all from us for today, folks. A very Merry Christmas to you. If you're looking for something to do in the post-Christmas lull, the deadline for our next issue, on the theme of sartorial, is midnight on New Year's Eve, so do send your stories, drama texts and poems our way. We'd love to read them. And do send us your season's greetings over Twitter at Far Off Places or Facebook. For now, though, make sure you eat up that Christmas pudding so you don't get blown away by the fierce wind outside. And a very Merry Christmas to you.